Gabe, thank you for coming in. Wow, just a remarkable history of accomplishment and contribution to mathematics and computer science and chess. I mean, law, you name it. Very multidisciplinary, transdisciplinary in the work you're doing. So really from multi-stakeholder to multidisciplinary to interdisciplinary to transdisciplinary, you cover it all. And you're continuing to make remarkable contributions. So thank you for coming in and sharing all of this with our audience.
Okay, thank you for the invitation. It is my pleasure to tell you about, I would say, what happens through my life.
So JP, you've got such a remarkable history and you've done so much in terms of shaping the world and shaping your region as well. And there has to be maybe three inflection points in your life that made this wonderful career you have, and all of the success that you've been able to have in your life. And it could be maybe with something when you were 3 years old or five, maybe that could have been inflection points, maybe a family member outside the family or experience. There could be junctures in the different kind of aspects in your education and in your career that made this wonderful person who continues to contribute so much. What were those really phenomenal inflection points in your life that made this wonderful person you are today?
Yes, there are many. And I will tell you, one is friendship, and the other thing is, I would say that I'm communicative. That means I'm open also for the opinions of others. That does not I would say mean that I agree with the others, as you may understand. But anyway, in fact, it already started in my second primary school, when we had to choose for the secondary school, and I had some friends. And the friends, they went to the school, which did not languages, but did the normal education for the Dutch as you go into the society, but not if you go to science. And I would like to go with my friends, and I said so to the persons who challenged, and I said I go to them to, as we call it, the HBS, that is the normal secondary school. And then the teacher said to me that you should go to the gymnasium. And he went to my parents and he said to my parents, your son should go to the gymnasium. And I said to my parents, no, I go with my friends. Yes. And then they said, think about it. And that was the best advice I have ever had in my life, that people encourage you to think about, and that means also to rethink. And I rethought, and I spoke with my parents, and I said to the head of our primary school, I go to the gymnasium. Two other ladies from my class also went to the, so we went with three. And that is, in fact, the basic step for my, I would say, career, because that brought me quite a lot, because understanding languages is important, not only for a computer, but also for a human being. So then I went to the gymnasium, and there I was seized by, I would say, the fever of chess. That means, I would say, delighted of chess. I should be a chess player, and I should also be, I would say, aim for the world championship, because that was what in my was in my mind. And I went to the chess clubs, and I spent all my time to chess, and I became a member of the team in the Netherlands who played for the championships of the Netherlands. And we became a really championship. And then 1 year after we were a champion, there came a boy in my team, and his name was Jan Timman. And I became friends with him. I'm still friends with him, yes. But sometimes I thought, if I will be the world champion, or I'll aim to be the world champion, then I never will reach it, because he should be first world champion. Yes. And that changed my mind. And I thought it is probably better that I wait for a while. And first, I finished the secondary school, and I also finished my study. I started already also to study mathematics at the in Amsterdam, the university, the Free University. So I decided first to make the study. And indeed, later on, I became the student champion of the Netherlands. I went to the World Championships, and I would say I was not there one of the best. I could manage there, but that was all. And I thought I should work harder. But then I should work harder, what to achieve. And I thought, now maybe it is better to rethink. And then first to finish the study, and then to, I would say, to consider again, where are we standing now? And of course, as you saw, Jan Timman, he climbed the ladder, and he finally ended as the second of the world. He, I would say, had a match with Karpov. He lost that match, but then at that time he was second, and that was of course fantastic. That was great, yes. And he is a great chess player. And I would never say that I was as great, or I would have been as great as he was. So my choice was okay, but it was some emotional overwinning for myself to leave chess where it is. But then I finished the study, my mathematical study, and I did it cum laude, as you can, so that's with some praise. And I thought, okay, that's mathematics. Let me see what I can do in the world of mathematics. And I went to the from the Free University to the Delft University. And there I was again happy. So I was happy. There was one guy, he said to me, "Yeah, you are a chess player. I tried to make a pro chess program." I said to him, Barend Swets was his name. "That's fantastic." I said, "Can you have a look at it? And can you, I would say, give me advice on the chess side?" And I said, "I would like to give you advice on the chess side, but also could you give me advice on the programming side?" And so he did so. And there I was sized by the I would say, I made from my hobby my profession. And that was the best choice I made in life. Making your profession your hobby. So it was, I would say, in fact, only one in my body. And so I was very, very happy. I can tell you furthermore, but maybe you have already a question.
Well, that's, I can see this abiding interest in, like you said, communicating, but also forming relationships with people and being very open to that. And also to immersing yourself in environments where you have a tremendous opportunity to learn and to tackle things that are challenging. So I can see that shaping early in your life, but it continues to shape your life to this day. You're always looking at diverse communities, engaging in diverse communities, engaging in diverse ways of thinking, and that has shaped you throughout your life. So quite remarkable. And I can see how those early sort of investigations into chess and that hobby, as you mentioned, as a profession, but into mathematics and computing science. So let's talk about on your educational journey. So it looks like clearly, even when you were very young, you were interested in math and the sciences, and then you continued that into university and this kind of abiding interest in math and also chess and artificial intelligence. Can you talk about your educational journey? You know, your undergraduate, your graduate years, and then the different schools that you've taught at, and why you decided to do research with those schools and teach at those schools.
Yes. About mathematics, I will be brief. I could be longer also, but I did the normal courses, and my grades were so that I, at the end of the day, gave me the cum laude. So you said you passed everything with honor, and I was happy with the honor, of course, but that was nothing special, because I saw around me also very gifted students and also later on masters and professors, which are still my friends. And they were gifted in some other things, in logic or in, let's say, solving differential equations or solving partial differential equations. And they were very good. And so I thought also, this is also a competitive world. But nevertheless, maybe I can find my place. And then I thought I can find my place because I'm already good in chess. And if I can make a program, a chess program that is good, then I could make there my points. Yes. And so I went to chess, and I popularized the chess in the university. So people, because I was also a teacher over there, I was a researcher and a teacher. Yes, it was a double function at the Delft University of Technology. And so I found some people who, I would say, helped me with, chess end games. And chess end games, chess program and chess end games. Because chess end game in that time, Ken Thompson, you know him, he was... I would say already well known in that time. He was at Bell Laboratories, and he made some end games on mating the lone king against the bishop and a knight and other things. And we looked at it, and by incident, I found a small error. He thought that the mini box that was the optimal play took 32 moves, and we computed that, and it was 33. So I was very, very happy. But Ken Thompson is one of the greatest, the very greatest men of our community. He was also the man of Unix, to give an example. And in that case, I'm only a small player in the world. But anyway, I do my utmost. And also then I did my utmost. So he encouraged me, and we also had a team, and we went also to the World Championships and also to the Netherlands Championships. We never got a title with the team, but anyway, we got enthusiasm, and also I managed, and there I claim my second point, I managed Owe, he was the former world champion, to get interested in it. And also Adrian de Groot, he was the famous psychologist who wrote the book Thought and Choice in Chess. So I had good, I would say, people who helped me to build up a career. And indeed, Owe passed away, but he supported me very, very well. And de Groot, he supported me also. There was one thing in which I would say, they disappeared from my lens and had their own lens. Because they said to me, Jaap, you are enthusiastic, but believe us, if you build a chess program, the chess program will never defeat the world champion. And I said, but I'm sure that that will happen. So I said to the Grote en Owe that I did not believe them. That is what people don't like, as you understand. So that is a fact, even if it is a scientific point, that the Groot, for instance, yes, he said, no, yeah, I will be your supervisor, yes, but I first explain you that what you aim to do, that never will happen. And it is very simple, because chess players, they chess grandmaster, the world champion, they play so well because they have intuition at their disposal. And intuition is not programmable. And so you understand, if it is not programmable and it is an essential point of a playing strength, then of course a program will never be stronger than the world champion. I said, I disagree, but I can only disagree by, I would say, mentioning this. And that is, I would say, I can only prove to be true by, I would say, practical experiences. So it is not, I would say, a logical proof what I show you, but I would say it can only be shown by producing such a program. And probably I'm not the kind of person who is able to do that, and that Ken Thompson was one of the guests who was able to do that, but I'm sure it will happen. Still, they did not believe, and then they said also, if you do the research, you also should have an interview series with chess grandmasters. So I asked also Karpov and other grandmasters of that time, and Owe was my intermediary to open the doors to them. And so I had talks with him, and that even talks from some 40, 50 persons which I talked with in that strength, and they all said that it will not happen, except of one. And that one, that was Grandmaster Sosonko. He was, I would say, he came from the Soviet Union, and there he came to the Netherlands, and we also became good on speaking terms. And he said, Jaap, of course that will happen. From all the people in the Netherlands, he was the only one who was at my side. And all other stronger grandmasters, Donner, Timman, Owe, Van der Sterre, everything said, no, 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 that is impossible. Van der Wiel, that's impossible. No, no, no. So still, I must say, and that is also one of the things that I said in the beginning, they remained my friends. I was also a good friend, a good relation with Owe. Sometimes he phoned me and he said, Meneer van der Heerik, he called me altijd Meneer van der Heerik, and I said, Meneer Owe to him, yes. That remains. And he said, I have made an appointment again for a lecture, and I will do the same as we always do. I give the lecture, and then you give them, let's say, the technical details of computer chess. Because Earl was a fan of computer chess, although he did not believe that its playing strength should ever surpass the playing strength of the world champion. So we did so, and we had a very pleasant time. And I must say that I always have had respect for, I would say, the Earl and the Groot. De Groot was very difficult, of course, because he was a member of my committee, the committee of the examination, the reading committee. He was the promoter, He was one of the three promoters, three promotories. One was, I would say, on computer science, that was Lombard. One was on psychology, that was De Groot. And one was on philosophy, and that was Doorman. Maybe you have heard the name of Doorman once. His, you know his father, probably. His father was the, I would say, the Schout bei Nacht in the war we had with the Japanese. And then he fought there for the Netherlands. But anyway, he was his son. He was a fighter. He was now not keen on my side, but he was not a chess player himself. But he was interested in the debate. He was interested in the debate. He said, "Okay, I support you," and I had much of his support, and I thank him very well. So I said already in the beginning, in life, you need supporters, and you need, I would say, opponents who disagree with you in opinion. But not really opponents who would like to fight with you, but disagreeing in their opinion. I learned quite a lot from Erwe, and I learned quite a lot from De Groot. And when I say, I had my goodbye speech, the valedictory speech in Tilburg, Erwe's daughter came to me and he thanked me. She said, "Jaap, you did not agree with my father, and my father also did not believe you're right. But you never exploited that. You said thank you, thank you, and you have never said that he was wrong or whatever. He was a respected researcher in his time, and that's true." And that opened my eyes for, I would say, future perception of researchers who sometimes went wrong, because they sometimes could have been wrong because they had no more information and they have not, I would say, the setting of mind that they could understand how to change. In, I would say, in the research on science in technology has happened and has reformed the world. And that is one of the guidelines I have nowadays in life. So that's my vision for that one. Let me say, I had then had a competition, a betting with Hans Beumen, international master. And I said that first in January 1919, the computer program would have a strength of 2600 ELO points. In January 1, 1995, the computer should have an ELO rating of 2650 points. And in 2000, in the change of the century, so in 2000, yes, it would defeat the world champion. The first one, that was, I lost because then there were somewhere still in 2400. The second one, I lost because at that time, in January 1995, they had a rating from 2060-43, and the bet was on 60-50. So I lost on 7 points. But that bet was made in 1983. So 7 points missing say, more than over 10 years. That is still a performance. So he said, "Yeah, I get the money, but you get the compliments because you are the moral winner." And then it was 1997, and Kasparov was defeated by Deep Blue. Yes, and then Bam said, "We now already stop the betting because we have not to wait until 2000. You get the money." So I was happy, and that was, I would say, my first winning thing and prediction which came out for that thing. So I was happy with that one. That was not the only one, and so I continue my world in that way. But maybe you have already a question on the story I told you.
I mean, you definitely are a forerunner in terms of thinking, and you have this idea of persistence and resilience and being agile in your thinking. I can see that, and it's informed you. And that's why, you're able to propagate and then also contribute to this whole area where ultimately, as you mentioned, chess was defeated by a computer, right? So, but you're always suggesting that from an early age. That's just quite remarkable. I can see how, you studied mathematics in Amsterdam with honors, and you got your PhD at Delft, and you mentioned that, but at chess and AI, and then you were at McGill as a visiting professor,
yes.
Leiden with the Department of Computer Science, and then Computer Science in Maastricht, and then part-time appointment as professor at and chair of legal informatics at Leiden. I think that's really fascinating.
Yes.
And
I come Sorry, I come soon back to you, but I would like to I would say to add one thing, because you need always supporters, yes? And one of my supporters, that was Claude Shannon, because I met him also in the 1974, 1978. And then we had interviews later, and that was in 1980, yes. And then in 1980 we talked about the chess, and he was delighted on it. And so when I was in London, and we always had a meeting, and his wife has arranged that. And when I was in London, I said, Claude is also there, but now it's going worse with him. So we had the last say. And when he passed away, she sent me the last pictures of Claude with, I would say, a chessboard. And she sent that to two other persons, and that is Tony Marsland from the thing, and to me, and to you, Monty Yearborn, I believe. So the 3-1. And so we were very happy with them, because it is an exception, because in our world, Claude Shannon is the, I would say, the people who I would say, who started with chess, but not only with chess, he did many things with computers, etc. So he was the front runner of our time. Although we know, of course, that we have also in chess, we have other front runners like McCarthy, for instance, and I know him also very well. And we also had a very good relationship. So I was supported in my thinking by them, because they were prepared to talk with me and to exchange ideas. And I would say I learned quite a lot of them. And most of the time, that is that you think that I developed the ideas myself. No, they were also given to me, and they were, I would say, helpful for my own development. That's important to know. Then, yes, okay, then let me say, for chess, my thing was over there. Let me first, for before I go to law, let me first start with ending the computer games world, yes? Because chess, that was in 2000, and in 2000, they looked, I was also in the Computer Olympiad involved, they looked at Go. And I said, again, I'm a kind of predictor, I said the game of Go, that will be, I would say, that will be also a victim for the programmers, for the AI development. And I said, before 2020, the world champion will be defeated by a computer program. I was again declared crazy, because with chess, I was right, but with Go, I did not understand, because chess was only a game of 10 to the power 43. And Go is a game of a complexity of 10 to the power 171. 170, that is 1 1 1 and 171 O's. So it is, I would say, it is fantastic. And that you think that the human mind will be defeated by a computer? And I said yes. And fortunately, by AlphaGo, it turned out to be true. And it was even more true by AlphaGo Zero. It turned to be extra true, because AlphaGo defeated the world champion, as you know, in 2017. And then, say, half a year later, AlphaGo, the program which beat the world champion, was defeated by deep learning. And therefore, I call it deep learning with 100 to zero. So you see how powerful computer programs are. And that's the second point which I would like to tell you about games. And the third point is, I would say, my prediction, because also you should have predictions. In 2005, I was invited as a member of the reading committee of a PhD thesis of Ivan Bratko. And he said, Jaap, if you are here, then probably you can also give a lecture. And I gave there a lecture, and it was, of course, on computer chess and also on the part of the candidate. Yes, and then I predicted that before January 1, 2035, the chess will be solved. So nowadays we have programs which are stronger than the world champion, but we still do not know whether the game is won for white, won for black, or it is a draw. Now, won for black is, I would say, not to be expected, because then there's a Zugzwang game, and I don't believe that chess is a Zugzwang game. So that implies this is a win for white, or it is a draw. That is still, I would say, in the open. Most people tend to think that it's a draw, but anyway, it has not been proven. I believe that it will be proven, and I'm now, I would say, looking at the in to what extent quantum computing can help us with that. And we follow also some courses, and I'm also with the ECART. I'm the chair, the conference chair of ECART, that is for the International Conference on Agent and Artificial Intelligence, for next year to have a special session with, I would say, AI and quantum computing. So that is the next line. Here, I finished my work on games. And now we go to law. Yes?
Yeah, so let me reflect on that. So, I mean,
Yes.
you predicted very early on, as you mentioned, you're working collaborators as well, but you predicted very early on that this sort of milestone event of Deep Blue, beating the world champion, and it actually changed mindsets, right? Because people thought these were kind of impossible barriers, and then once you do something like that, then it opens the floodgates of other possibilities. And then again, because you have this alpha, you have Go, which is much more complex, and you again predicted that it's going to be defeated. And guess what? The defeat did happen. And in fact, AlphaGo Zero is even phenomenal, right? I mean, it's just even an order, a magnitude even better. And so all of your predictions down to this sort of really thorough understanding of chess, it will happen, within the foreseeable few, I mean, 10 years, right? Roughly 10 years. I mean, just remarkable your ability to predict and to foresee all of these milestones. And then you're seeing the implications of quantum computing and artificial intelligence and what that would mean in terms of opening up all sorts of vistas. And you saw that in gaming, but of course, if you look at your work, you're doing it. Your work is across many, many domains. So, you can see the implications across many other domains. But you definitely made your landmark contribution in the gaming area, and direct contribution, and also your amazing ability to do predictions against, the sort of the majority of the forecasters out there that thought, for example, Go would never be done, right? Because it just thought it was too complex. And yet you foresaw. So that's really remarkable, your abilities and your ability to see where things are going as well, right? So.
Thank you for, I would say, the adhesion. And yeah, I'm happy with it. And of course, yes, the only thing I could say, I have had luck in life that I had the abilities to think about it and that I was surrounded by sparring partners. Because I would say most of the sparring partners said, no, yeah, that will not happen. And that implies that I was forced to sharpen my ideas and to give more body to my ideas. And then, of course, it turns out that I would say how sharp the ideas were. I needed the help of other people. I had very good relations with the team of Deep Blue, but they were also, like I said, with Jan Timman, they were better in programming the specifics for the Deep Blue program. We helped them. Dab Hartman, my friend, he did a research for his master's thesis on opening bibliothèque, and we, I would say, give the I would say the ideas on the opening book to the I'd say the Deep Blue team. So we collaborate with them together. Now we serve them a little bit, so to speak. But it's due to the communication, due to the relations we had with them. So I'm very happy with my I'd say the environment I may live in. We go
So,
back. We go back to what happens in my life. I
yeah, but
was.
then you get your appointment here at Maastricht, and then you get into Leiden with the chair of legal informatics. So it's
Yes,
like.
that's what I will bring up now. Let me first say, with my PhD thesis in 1983, in which I announced that it will be the world champion, I post one signpost for the University of Delft. And they say we should do more on artificial intelligence. So in Delft University, I was well known as the founder of the artificial intelligence in the Netherlands. There is one more founder that is Dennis de Champeau de La Boulaye, and he did similar time the same, no, not the same work, but other work, but also on artificial intelligence at the University of Amsterdam. But anyway, I was so in that way destined to do that, and it had some I'll say spread over the whole country. And I was indeed what you mentioned already. I was invited to go to the McGill University in Montreal, and then also Leiden had heard that, and they had a very I'd say advanced or a very modern dean at that time. The dean thought the computers are here. Maybe the world of law can use the computers. And I read in the paper that Jaap van der Heerik knows something about that. Let me see whether we could have a chair for him. At that time, in 1987, I was already professor at Maastricht University in artificial, not artificial intelligence, it was in that time computer science still called. I was professor of computer science in Maastricht. And then all of a sudden, they said to me, we have a one-day position for you to, I would say, to teach lawyers on computers. Would you accept that? I said, I'm already professor. And they said, yeah, but we would have a special position. I said, that's okay. Then they said to me, when I had the first speak with them, they said, we in Leiden, we are very, very, I would say, important, as you understand. And so we expect that every recent appointed professor has within 1 year his valedictory, his inaugural address. Yes? And I said, yes, but I do not know anything about law. So I need 3 years to master the law because normal students do it in 5 years. I promise you that I will do my utmost and I do it in 3 years. But anyway, you should be give 3 years. So over 3 years, I said in 1988, I will give my inaugural address. And then the rector said to me, okay, that is good. It's an exception. We immediately make the appointment. So already in 1988, I make an appointment for June 21, 1991. So 3 years later, yes? That was a burden on my shoulder because yeah, they expect something from me. And I would say, work very hard. And how should you make true what I promised them?
Yeah,
So
and
I
in fact, in January of 2014, you now you get this appointment at Leiden as professor of law and computer science in the faculty of
Yes.
law and the faculty of science. I think it's quite amazing, right?
Yes, it is. But then I thought, what shall I do? And here I would say, very, very, I would say, inspired by Claude Shannon, yes. No, not by Alan Turing, excuse me. No, yeah. Also Claude Shannon, but here it was Alan Turing. I have never met him because he was passed away in my youth. He passed away in my youth, but I had read, of course, many things of him. And he had the famous article in 1950, Can Machines Think? Yes. And that was, of course, that was, I would say, very, very far. But anyway, I was inspired by that. Yes. And I thought, before thinking, yes, we have an easier task, and that is thinking in a special area. For instance, thinking in the area of law. And I thought that's probably a good idea. And so I give the title, and then in English it is, Can Computers Judge Court Cases? They were upset. And also, I have many friends who are working in the legal field, yes? And they said to me, Jaap, 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 Jaap. It's a shame for us that you say something. You think that everything is programmable, yes? And that is, what are you doing? What are you, I would say, trying to reach with this statement and with this lecture? I said, yeah, that is, I would say, this is progress of science. It's a progress of technology, both science and technology. And that's the progress of artificial intelligence. That is laughable, they said. That this cannot be happened. It will never happen. I said, okay, but anyway, do you allow me that I explain the ideas and that we have here the start of a new thinking? That was the so in 1988, and that was, I would say, expressed in 1991. And there I came up, and of course, as you may understand, it was on Friday, June 21, and on Saturday, June 22, the Dutch papers, most of them on page one, the front pages, they had, I would say, a report of my lecture and what happens in Leiden University. And of course, the tendency of that report, that was, first of all, a question to the university, who have they appointed now and for what reason? Yes. And the second one is that it came to such statements into the open because that is clearly impossible. And why should we spend so much time to that? And how is it with our education in the Netherlands? I can tell you it is very good with the education in the Netherlands. They gave me the space to tell my stories, and they supported me, I would say, the next 30 years, I would say, to convince them, to be convinced by me, by the, I would say, the happenings, what they saw occurring at the research of law and computer science. And that was a long path, but now I'm, I would say, more than fully accepted in the in this world. And I can tell, give you examples of that way. Nowadays, there are all kinds of people who work with it, but it is, I would say, for instance, there's a question of the human measure is an important point. Yeah? Because if we give that to computers, then we lose the human measure. And how do we know it is fair? That is one of the questions, of course. And it is not only fair, but we have all kinds of, I'd say, ethics. And that is an important point. And I sent you also the last publication I gave in AI and ethics together with a very gifted student, George Statis. And that is that's from March 18 this year. So I'm very happy and I'm very convinced. And I'm very, I would say, very, I would say, grateful that I still have the power to work on it and to show the world that it is really, I would say, in the founder. Yes, and that's the most important point.
Yeah, indeed, you're producing just great work today, and you have these roots dating back decades of really laying the seeds for all of this, and in fact, all of your the legal informatics side has come true, right? I mean, especially
yes.
The abilities of large language models, and you know, they're testing them on the MLLUs, these massive matrix kind of language understanding. Everything that you've been working on is coming true, even though at the time people were saying it's not going to happen, and yet it's happening, and you're still publishing to further the work. So it's quite remarkable.
Yes,
something
I
else.
Must say, I have been given even the opportunity to two times to address the High Court of India with this remark, and I get compliments for my thing. That is not only for the computers can teach. I have already, and that's I come to my third point. Just the fourth point was games or chess and Go, etc. The second point was law. But the third point now is more specific, but it is a very important one, and that is eye contracts. Because eye contracts is, I would say, part of contracts, as you may understand, and it is intelligence contracts.
Right.
And that is the future for law and for, I would say, society nowadays. Let me give you a short start. The start is, of course, that previously we had all kinds of humans and they made contact with each other. And they, I would say, went to the official instances to have, I would say, the contracts regular and, I would say, recognized by law. And so that was all. That was human being, yes? And then, of course, we thought when the computers came down, we could digitize the contracts. That's probably if we store them, digitized contracts, then we can search them and then we can collect them and we could check them and we could handle, I would say, all our clients much faster. Yes. So then we had digitized contracts. As soon as we had digitized contracts, we understand that contracts were full of, I would say, rules and guidelines and appointments. Yes. But probably we could say we could build in the contracts, we could build in signs. So if the contract was for 3 months or for 5 years, yes, then at the end of that period, that there was a sign from the computer that it should be, I would say, first of all, closed or it should be prolonged. Yes, so that was continued. So that was one of the points, but that helped not only for that one, because also they could look when some of the, I would say, the conditions were not followed up. And then, of course, they could do something. That was all fine. So we went from, I would say, digitized contracts to smart contracts. Yes, smart contracts. Yes, that is fantastic. The computer can do many things, yes. And now the last, I would say, 2-3 years, or maybe we could say from 2000, now 2020 or so, 2003, now 2000, the first ideas came already sometimes a little bit earlier, of course. But anyway, we now have I contracts, intelligence contracts. And let me give you an example of the intelligence contract that is as follows. What I just said of the length of a program, a condition, yes, and then that the computer could announce it. The computer has all kinds of things, and they protect all the conditions. But one of the conditions for all people with contracts is money. Yes? And so regulating money is a very important point. But what can happen nowadays with Russia, Ukraine, with Israel, with Hamas, with all kinds of things where we have war and where we see that the prices of oil are going up and down and going up and down or whatever, and especially if going up, then many contracts cannot be fulfilled anymore. Because people are, I would say, are in a difficult position. They should be warned. They should be warned by their own programs. Thus, the program should not only look at the conditions which they had agreed at the beginning, but the program should also be a warning system for what happens in the world around for the contracts. And that is, in essence, what means I contracts. And to that world, we are in a transition to go to I contracts. And I'm sure that will happen, say, in the next 5 years.
Yeah, that's remarkable because really, large language models in particular have access to so much data and real time as well. So you can factor in all of the risk mitigation into those contracts, right? Or the geopolitical chaos, but also the financial markets, all of these things that are happening in real time, you could actually have that in advising how that I contract is put together, right? And it's beyond the capability of a human being. You would need AI to do it, right? Because of all the classifications that are occurring in the associations, the pattern matching that's happening. That's really, really interesting. So for sure it'll happen because you have already predicted it in
Yes.
yourself,
Thank
right?
you.
So
Thank you. Thank you.
that's
Thank
gonna happen,
you.
right?
Yes. Yeah.
But there's
Yes.
so much to mine in your career. I mean, and unfortunately, I have another meeting coming up pretty shortly. So I just want to highlight that all of this, we've gone to this far, and then you get an appointment in the Faculty of Humanities at Tilburg, right? So, and doing work in e-humanities, which of course now you could have i-humanities, right? Because of where it's going and. Professor to Center of Regional Knowledge Development, which is now the dual PhD center. I mean, it just goes on and on about all of these different areas that you're involved with. And we talked about the Computer Chess Association, or you're an honorary member, the Netherlands Association of Artificial Intelligence. You're actually the father of AI in the Netherlands, when you're an honorary member. The Legal Knowledge Systems, honorary president. Founding director of ICAT, the Institute of Knowledge and Agency Technologies, one of the founders of the Netherlands Research School for Informatics and Knowledge Systems, a founding director of the Tilburg Center for Cognition and Communication, co-founder of the Leiden Center for Data Science, et cetera, et cetera. Active within the NWO, chairperson of Token 2000, Token and Catch, chair of Big Bridge, vice chair of NCF. Co-founder, executive board member of the Leiden-Delft Erasmus Center for Bold Cities. I mean, supervisor, 93 successful, like PhD students. It just goes on and on. I mean, it's just remarkable, right? And you're making significant contributions in every area that you touch because we're down to our closing minutes. Can you wrap up with some of the additional predictions that you want to make beyond what we already covered today? And then that's the next question. And then the final question would be, what would your recommendations be to the audience? But we really need a half a day to mine some of what you're doing, or really an entire workshop. But can you
Yes.
prediction
Thank
other
you. Thank
predictions
you.
of areas that you see? Which we haven't got into. So you've already talked about quantum computing, and there's exascale supercomputing that's already out there. maybe Zettascale, there's superconductors of biomedical innovation. I mean, there's a lot of things going on. Can you make some additional predictions because you are the master predictor?
Yes, we are now, I'll say, we are now arriving again at the human point of view. And the human point of view is that lawyers would like to see, I'll say, the human measurement. They said, as we call it in Dutch, the menselijke maat. So they said, you shouldn't have computers because then you have no grip on them. So the human measurement should be done. But recently, I would say, learned that the people who are, say, giving parking fines, yes, they said sometimes you must make exceptions, and we do not know how to make the exceptions. And then they said, we have so far not stored all the exceptions we made. So in the future, we should, I would say, store all the exceptions, and then we have a like we have in law also, then we have the verdicts compiled. But then we should think about then we change of system. Then we get change from statute law to case law. And now the question is, could we use case law for applying the human mind, the human, I would say, the human measure? Yes. So if we store all the verdicts with human measure, really by human measure, in the computer, yes. And then we have a new case, and we look in the computer, and it is not completely in the computer, but we fit it in, yes. That fitting in, then we make from all the human measures, we make a new verdict. Is that verdict, is that a, I would say, a human measurement verdict, or is that, I would say, a computer verdict? And that's the question what they discuss in that world. I think we should handle that, and we should go from statute law to case law. But I would say not everybody agrees with that, and that's kind of discussion. And so if you ask for advice, please look at it, and I would say give your students a better education. And that's not only, I mean the students of law, that doesn't only hold for the Netherlands. And let me say about, I told you about I would say, the student status, your status, which I now working on preventive law. And because computers could also help that in the case of prevention. Yes. And if you look at that, then of course I work together with Harvard University, with Scott Brouwer. And I work also with Helena Hapiel from Lapland University. So, and then of course, as I told you already, with Pavan Gunnar, nee, pa yeah, Pavan Gunnar, yeah, from India, and that inspires me, and therefore I see that in community building that will be the future, yes. And then of course, if we go back, we think that Turing is one of the origins of the computer chess, but the first game, the first, I would say, first ideas, they were early in 1912, von Neumann. I would like to call to coin here the name von Neumann. If you see who started all, Turing is a very good person, but von Neumann is our hero. And that will be my, I would say, advice for you. If you would like to know what will happen in the future, then look at the work from von Neumann. Because he was fundamental, I would say, for the, I would say, A-bomb and H-bomb. And of course, we think that it is Oppenheimer, and Oppenheimer was indeed the director, but the advisor was von Neumann. And he was much, much more intelligent than Oppenheimer. He was the man, and you could look at it if you read The Maniac, that's a book which I could advise you, from Labatou. And then you see how he was, I would say, in front of all these things. And then he said for developing the H-bomb of the H-bomb of A-bomb or whatever, because that's the main threat, yes? And how do we do the main threat for human beings? How do we handle that, yes? And that's indeed a question, and that's in fact the main question. And as he said already, we should have a treaty, like we had a treaty also for the Second World War before we set the bomb on Hiroshima. And that was, I would say, for some a mistake, and for others one was it, I would say, just the goal. But we should take care of the future. And the future is in technology, but the future is also in the human mind, who is, I would say, here to communicate with each other. So communication from human minds is more important than, let's say, what we now see in Ukraine and what we see in Hamas or in Israel. I think They should talk with each other. They should talk with each other. And I'm say, inclined to say to Netanyahu that he should really talk to him. And if you have seen in my literature, yes, I once gained a prize, the Yumi's Award, with Netanyahu. That was a nephew of this Netanyahu. So I know how clever they are. And I hope that this Netanyahu will also as clever as his nephew, and that he started to talk to other people.
And that is really good advice to the audience as well, because you were really very early on, even when as a youngster, you're a proponent of communication, open communication, right? And one of the takeaways is that you continue that inter sort of language communication, right? And reaching out and associating with each other. Is there one final recommendation you'll want to leave with the audience? And then that'll be my last question.
Now, my most important recommendation is, if you would like to reach something in life, be open. Be open. As much as possible, be open on it. Because then, together with be trusted, speak always trustworthy. Just never have tricks. And we see too many people who have tricks in communication also. If you have never tricks, you will also open. Of course, you needed some self-assurance, because otherwise you cannot have this opinion, of course. I know that. But if you follow that, and if you are prepared to say something. In my secondary school, once the rector, the highest man, he also reproached me for something I'm not going to in details. And then he said to me, because I said, "No, Mr. Rector, that's not possible." He said to me, "Van den Heerik, you would not like to reproach me. You wouldn't like to contradict me." And I said, "Yes, Mr. Rector, I would like to do so." And that was for the whole gymnasium, I would say, a statement for years. Because, as you understand, I was also there an exception, because nobody had the courage to say something.
Well, your life has definitely been one of courage and foresight and having global impact in so many different dimensions. And it's just remarkable. So thank you for coming in and sharing so much with our audience. Jaap, it was a pleasure to talk with you today.
Thank you for receiving me. It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.